Hey there, welcome to Board Game Hot Takes. My name's Tim.
And this is Chris.
This is Adam.
And today we're going to feature our review of Wormspan, and then we'll also be covering some games that have been on our table lately, including Soul Last Days of a Star, Mind Management, and Turing Machine. But before we get into the discussion on those games, I've got some poll results to cover. As usual, I ask polls on social media, both on our Blue Sky account as well as our Facebook group. And the question I asked this week, in general, do you prefer board games to have a real-world theme, such as nature, city-themed, stock market, etc., or a fantastical theme, such as fantasy, sci-fi, horror, fictional, etc.? The options I gave, real-world got 9% on the polls, fantastical got 23%, depends on the game got 64%, theme is a construct and doesn't matter at all got 4%. Now, I do regret one of the options I gave on this poll. Depends on the game, I felt was just a little too open-ended. Got 64% of the vote. I wish I had left it off. I'm always trying to appease our listeners who were complaining that I don't have enough options on the poll, so I gave that one. But I feel like I should have probably locked everybody into a little bit tighter boxes here.
And thanks for owning that, Tim.
Well, Tim, I just want to please you. I prefer a theme. Well, it wasn't really one of the answers that you put on there, but I prefer a theme that has some sort of attachment to the real world. So I guess what I don't like is completely fantastical themes, wizards flying around on turtles that fly in the sky with Dragon Balls, like shooting stuff over here. I like economy games, or I do tend to prefer some sort of game that has, like, PAX Premier Second Edition. There's some attachment to history in there. Well, it's very historical. But I also like games like Eclipse, Second Dawn for the Galaxy. But to me, that could possibly happen in some galaxy super far away. There could be all these alien races duking it out for some old empire and leftover stuff and artifacts. Like, who knows what's out there in all these different galaxies? So something like that still works for me, whereas I'm a little bit turned off by gnomes and orcs and elves hanging out in the forest and doing some fairy magical stuff with mushrooms. I can't get as into that as other types of games.
Yeah, I don't like when they do fairly magical things either. I think they should really just double down and do like real magical things if they're going
to
do them.
Well, I chose fantastical. I tend to prefer themes that are a little bit more out of the ordinary, that aren't real world. There are some great games that have real world themes. And to be honest, I'm usually going to pick the games I play based on the mechanisms. I'm definitely a mechanisms first type of person. But I think generally I prefer fantastical themes a little bit more.
Yeah. And for me, I swear I am not saying this as a cop out. I definitely can see the attraction of both, and I am completely charmed by both if they're done well. And just to bring tonight's game into it, Wingspan is an amazing game. I love that game, and I love the connection to the natural world. But the theme of Wormspan, without, you know, giving away too much here, so charming and fun that, you know, I can see the attraction of both of those. To take another couple of, you know, quasi-related games between publisher and designers, Elizabeth Hargrave did Mariposa. And what a great idea to take the natural world again and put it into a game. Or The Fox Experiment, another Elizabeth Hargrave game that did a great job of talking about natural science and the natural world, and they're the quasi-natural world because it was about experiments, and then making it into a game. And I'm bringing her name up so much, not just because of the connection to Wormspan, but because she is someone who I think does a great job of bringing the natural world to board games. But I'm equally charmed by the theme of Apiary, another Stonemaier game. What a great, I mean, we did the review of that a couple weeks ago. I thought that was so cool. And I was even a little bit skeptical of that one because I'm like, space bees, what's that all about? But I found it fantastical and fun. And it actually did bring a little bit of the natural world into the game as well. So I can honestly say I do not have a strong preference one way or the other on the theme for a game, as long as it's good.
Well, here's how some of our listeners answered. So Rick Burkowski said, real world is interesting to me if it's something I'll never actually get to do, like run a vineyard, for example. David Rodriguez said, I'm okay with real world themes, but fantastical themes provide a sense of escape that real world themes just don't. Leanne said, for me, I think I prefer things tied to reality. I think it's because my imagination sucks. And then Mel said, great question. My gut reaction was fantastical themes, but when I look at my top played games, that doesn't match. I guess it's more about mechanisms and gameplay for me. And I actually found quite a few listeners who responded on our Blue Sky post said something similar, that they thought they preferred one, but then when they checked their collection, it wasn't the one that they had picked, or, you know, checked their favorite games. So, you know, I think it's pretty interesting that, you know, how we choose games, how we settle into the games we love the most. Theme may be a part of it, but it's probably not always the only thing.
I actually agree with that last point, because if you ask me my gut reaction to this one, my gut reaction was different than my analyzed reaction. And my gut reaction is fantastical. And I think I've probably said as much on the show before. But when I actually took a step back and looked at the games that I enjoy and the themes that I've really enjoyed, that's when I saw some of those comparisons that I was talking about earlier, and just how much even a quote-unquote mundane or real-world kind of theme can really be entertaining if attached to a good game and if it's integrated well into the game.
Yeah. I'm just looking at my games, my top games here real quick, just to see what's up there. Now I'm curious. I didn't actually do this kind of analysis, but so a lot of sci-fi, not a big surprise. Hegemony is up there. Innis is up there. Smartphone Inc. Aha. Great one. But then Azul is also up there. Eclipse. So I don't know. Star Wars, is that fantastical? A lot of people would say that's fantastical. So I guess I'm okay with fantastical as long as it has that sci-fi sort of frosting on it.
The reason Adam picked this topic for the poll tonight was because obviously we're going to be reviewing Wormspan. And Wormspan is an interesting game because it is clearly a fantastical theme, and we'll get into the details on that in a second. But it's based on the Wingspan model. In fact, it says right on the box, Wormspan, a Wingspan game. So, you know, Wingspan is the opposite of fantastical. It's a complete nature theme game with really nothing fantastical at all in the theme. So, you know, interesting to hear how people feel, because we're going to be talking about both of these games quite a bit today. With that said, let's jump into a description of Wormspan. In Wormspan, players take the roles of dragonologists who are building caves to attract dragons and then adventuring into the caves and interacting with the dragons for various benefits those magnificent beasts can bestow, including but not limited to their hoards of gold. On your turn, you'll either be playing a cave card into one of the three caves on your player board to get immediate benefits, paying resources to play dragon cards into the caves you've built out, or adventuring into one of your three caves and interacting with the dragons there, triggering a variety of benefits. One of the benefits you can get include gaining prestige with the regional dragon guild, which moves your guild marker around a circular track, gaining various rewards. But you want to gain prestige quickly because you'll be racing other players for some of the most exciting rewards. Each of the actions you take will cost you a coin, and you'll keep taking actions until you're out of coins in that round. At the end of each round, you compare with the other players on how well you achieve special round end goals, and then restock with coins and a dragon egg for the next round. The game is played over four rounds, and the player with the most points on their dragon cards, end round goal scoring, and guild rewards is the winner. Wormspan was designed by Connie Vogelman and developed by Elizabeth Hargrave, with art by Clementine Comperdeau, and we were sent the review copy of Wormspan by the publisher, Stonemaier Games. Now, obviously, Wormspan is kind of a spin-off, or it's a take from some of Wingspan's base mechanisms. And we'll probably be mentioning some of those comparisons as we discuss these games, as we talk about our review. But at the end of our review and our final thoughts, we're going to go a little deeper. We'll really compare how we felt about Wingspan and, you know, what of the two, which we prefer, and you know, really compare the differences for us. So that if you're here to really kind of hear how you think Wormspan is going to compare to Wingspan, you'll hear a little bit of that sprinkled throughout, but stick around to the end because we'll get into that in some more detail. With that said, let's jump into the gameplay and mechanisms of Wormspan.
First thing that stood out to me, you mentioned it in your rules description, Tim, was this guild track. So as you're playing the game, as you're exploring these caves or playing some of these cards, you're going to get a little icon that says move up on this guild track. And I thought that was a nice piece of player interaction there. There's a little bit of race going on. So as you get to the, I guess it's the 6 o'clock position and back around to the 12 o'clock position, you get to put one of your player markers on a little benefit. And once you take that benefit, no one else can get it. There's a few where other players can get the benefit, but in lots of cases, it's a race to get to that benefit. So that little guild track thing stood out a lot to me as a portion of a game that's not included in Wingspan that is in here. I'm already doing the compare and contrast thing, but I really enjoyed that guild track.
Yeah, I thought the guild track was really cool too. And one of my favorite parts about it was that not only do you get those benefits when you hit that 6 and 12, you know, marker on it, you know, kind of the top and the bottom spots on the tracks, but also as you're moving around the track, you just have the opportunity to pick up different benefits. Each time you move, you're going to get something. It could be one of the several resources. It could be a certain type of card. It could even be something like a coin, which are very valuable. And this was a fun way to think about resources in this game. As a comparison to Wingspan, for example, with Wingspan, you know, you would take the gain food action. And depending on how many birds you'd played on there, you'd get a different amount of food. But here you're going to get your resources from a few different places. One of them is just by playing these cave cards, which give you an immediate benefit. But one of them is moving around this track. And so it was always a fun decision to say, hey, I really need a gold bar, or I need a crystal. How am I going to get that this turn? I could just take, go into, explore into the cave that gave me a resource, but it's, you know, that's not the only way. I might go into the one that gives me a dragon card, hit that guild track bonus as I'm going through that cave, move the marker. Oh, I just got my crystal that way. So it was, this felt a little bit more tinkery. It felt like I was able to kind of play around with the system a little bit more, find different ways to optimize and try to get the things I needed without taking a specific action just to get them. And I thought that was really fun.
And it really was even more complex than just getting a resource, because often you could get something entirely different. You might get a card, you might get a cave card, you might get a dragon card, you might get a resource. If you make it all the way around the track, you might actually get a coin. And that's sort of the king of all resources in this game, because it's what allows you to take turns in the first place. So you were able to get all kinds of different things, and absolutely it would drive your decision-making process knowing that you might be able to get one of those things as you moved around the circle. And those half circle, the 6 and 12 benefits, those were big benefits. I mean, those were things like getting a couple of resources and playing a card or something like that. Something that otherwise might take you a couple of turns to do, you could do by placing one token. And so, I mean, those were pretty overpowered benefits in some circumstances. So I just want to go back and say, I think this is one of the neatest additions to the game. And one of the reasons that I liked this edition so much is because there is nothing but fun when you're able to just move around a track and get a benefit for every spot. I mean, who doesn't love doing that? I mean, that is just a super fun thing to do, especially when those benefits get bigger and stronger as you move around the circle and you have those extra super benefits at the 6 and 12 positions. So I think things like this in games are always a good time because they give you so much so quickly, and that's a blast.
Another thing you mentioned, Tim and Chris, was the coins in this game, and that lets you do the actions, excavate or entice, I think it is, to try to get a dragon over adventure. Yeah, so excavate, explore, excavate. This is a 3X, a 3E game. We have a 3E game.
The 3X game.
So I liked the coin mechanism here. Again, compared to Wingspan, I thought it was a lot more interesting to use the coins rather than these little cubes. I'm doing the comparison. Sorry, Tim. But you and Chris mentioned it too. You might be able to get extra coins throughout the round. So that gives yourself an extra action. Everybody starts with 6 coins at the end of the round. And you use those however you want to use them. Are you going to go buy a little cave card? Are you going to go exploring down these caves to get all those benefits and trigger your little engine that you built out, your tableau that you've built out? So I thought the decision on how to use the coins was interesting too.
Yeah, I think these coins were an improvement over the old action cubes from Wingspan for a couple of reasons. Number one, they're just more thematic. You know, it's like, oh, I've got to, you know, have money to spend to go exploring or to excavate this cave. So it just felt a little bit more thematic. And then when you spent those coins, you might spend it on one of the basic, you know, excavate a cave or play a dragon. But what was really fun is when you were playing it to explore. And the cool thing about this was that you now, if you're going to explore the same cave multiple times and around, the cost gets more. So the first time you'd pay a coin, the second time you explore the same cave, you got to pay a coin and an egg. The third time it's a coin and 2 eggs. And why this, I think, makes a big difference. One of the things I didn't really like about Wingspan was that you could just build up one row. And if you got the right cards in there, you might barely have to take the other actions. You could just keep hitting that same row, that triggering that same action over and over again and just getting the benefits on the action. And that just got dull to me. You know, like once I kind of built up that role, I'm like, why would I do anything else? But it's boring to do this thing over and over. Probably why I was never good at Wingspan, because I never wanted to just do that redundant action. But in Wormspan, it feels like it's more valuable to build up multiple rows. Beyond that, as you're taking the action, you don't just get one benefit. Like it's not just gain food, but it's like, even before you put dragons there, there's a gain food action. And then the next one would be take a guild movement action. And the next one's gain another resource. And so it just varies. And as you put dragons in there, it gets really exciting. So I always just had fun exploring these caves and building up multiple caves. And just, you know, the replacement of the action cubes with the coins was great. The other thing I liked about it was that it wasn't set. You know, it wasn't like you start with 7 coins, but you might spend an extra coin to play a big dragon instead of just the action use. You could sometimes, that would be a cost to play something, or you might gain an extra coin. There's a couple ways to do it in the game. They're very hard to get, but maybe getting to a certain space on the guild track would get you an extra coin. Or when you, I think when you excavate the last space on any one of the caves, you can turn in some resources for a coin, if I remember right. So it was fun to play around with that a little bit. And sometimes it was worth giving away an action to get a big, powerful benefit. Or maybe you could get an action or an extra action or two by picking up extra coins. I really like this system.
Yeah, the Explorer was a really cool addition to this game, because on the one hand, you have to take that extra action just to take the move in the first place, whereas in Wingspan, you didn't. When you took the action, you got the benefits that went down that row. Here, you had to make a fairly expensive and very considered kind of decision about that. But you actually got more out of it generally, because as you're moving through the cave, you keep moving to the right until you hit a stop sign. And once you put a dragon out, it covers the stop sign. But between each dragon, there's some benefit. And so you are going to get a benefit at the beginning of the track for each dragon that has an explore benefit. And between every two dragons, there's going to be some benefit you could get. And in a little nod to Wingspan, there were somewhat themes of those different caves. So on the top one, you got a food resource. The next one, the first space or two, you got a dragon card. And then the last one, you got a cave card. Now, farther down the track, you got things like eggs in all of the different spaces. And I forget what all the last one was, but they were not quite as restrictive as the different rows in Wingspan. But I do want to go back to the thing about the coins, because I think on this one, I need to differ with you guys. I did not like the addition of the coins. That was actually, I thought, one of the biggest changes in the game that I disliked. And the reason for that is, you're playing Wingspan, and it's impossible to avoid the comparisons here, and people know Wingspan, so I think it's actually useful to make the comparisons as we're talking through this. But in Wingspan, the turns only get so complex, and you get fewer of them toward the end of the game. And that means that as you're getting into those longer, more complex turns, you're taking fewer of them. And so the game kind of tends to stay at a steady pace. In this game, as you're going through those turns, you're generally taking more turns at the end of the game because you have more opportunities to get those coins because you're taking more powerful actions and your turns are getting more complex. So the first round of the four tends to be pretty quick. By the time you get to the last round, it can be pretty long. And I'll just give an example of why I think this can be problematic. You can end your round before the other players do. It can happen for a couple of reasons. It can happen because you decide to pass, which I don't know exactly what the scenario would be where you would pass generally. I think I may have done it once because I didn't have anything productive to do, but you can pass.
And the coins were worth a point at the end, I believe. And so there was some value to skipping an action if you really didn't have anything useful to do, but you'd be playing pretty inefficiently if you do that frequently or if you had more than one coin. So it's something you could do, but not something you really want to do.
Yes, that's very true. That's a good point. In the game I played, and I swear this is not just sour grapes, I got crushed. I was playing with two other people and I was getting absolutely crushed. And I was sitting there for 5 or 10 minutes while I was waiting for these other folks to finish up their rounds where they were being efficient and having complex turns to take and doing multiple things. And clearly I was not playing it to the greatest efficiency, but there is the possibility that you're going to be playing with someone who's not playing as well as the others. And that was a bit of a bummer. I actually found myself enjoying that part of the game a lot less and being frustrated by how that worked.
I think that's got to be really rare, Chris. I mean, I could see how it happened, but I'd love to see the replay on your game because I just didn't see anybody's turns extend that much longer. There was only a couple of ways you could pick up silver. So unless one player spent two extra silver in that last round to, you know, play extra dragons, and then the other players all happen to hit that one guild space that gets you a coin and then also excavated two caves. I mean, there just shouldn't be that much of a variance usually. But, you know, that's interesting. I had not seen that happen in my several plays of playing Wormspan.
Yeah, Chris, I think that's an interesting take. I hadn't considered that with the, you know, sitting around watching people take their turns. That's always a bummer when that kind of stuff happens. But I want to go back to the meat and potatoes of this game, which I thought was pretty cool. This excavate and putting a dragon down. This is how you build your tableau in this game, or three different tableaus, if you like. When you build the cave, that gives you some benefits. That's easy and nice, and it's just handing out resources. So another easy way to get food, which sometimes getting food in Wingspan was a bummer. You just put your action up there, and if you don't have any birds up there, you get like one or two things from the bird feeder. So that's kind of a drag. Yeah. But here, almost every time you're putting a cave out, you're getting some cool stuff. And then that gives you a home for the next dragon, which lets you go explore that. So the meat and potatoes of this game, or the meat and crystals or milk bottles of this game, if you like, is building those caves and putting those dragons out and activating those tableaus. Just a fun, neat way to build a little engine and have your guys go explore. So that's kind of the big picture, but I didn't want to miss just that fun element of the game.
Yeah, I think that's one of the key fun elements that was added here, Adam. I thought the cave cards was a great addition. It was kind of, you had to set up your engine. It's almost like in viticulture where you first have to, you know, sow your field and then plant grapes, and then you get the, well, here it's a little bit simpler, but you first have to excavate the cave, and then you can play a dragon in it, and then you can adventure down that cave and get the benefit. The other thing that I thought was really cool here were the dragon cards themselves. Now, if you're familiar with Wingspan, these have a very familiar layout to you. What you'll see is the name of the dragon at the top. You'll see a beautiful illustrated photo of it. It will have some attributes listed in there, like, you know, its size and its personality. And then it shows you which cave it can go in. So again, very similar to what you would see on a Wingspan bird. The thing that I thought worked really well, or was maybe an improvement over the base game of Wingspan, was that in Wormspan, it felt like a much larger variety of types of effects that you're getting from these dragons than in the base game of Wingspan. Now, after I played Wingspan with all the expansions, I think there's three right now, you start to get a lot more variety in those cards. But in the base game, it felt like just a few straightforward effects. You know, you tuck a bird, you get a resource, you cash a resource. There's a few things, draw an extra card. In this one, some of those same effects still exist here, but it felt like a bigger variety. One of the types of dragons that you would see frequently here were these hatchlings. And these were kind of neat. They always cost you an egg and usually a milk as well. So the idea, of course, that you're spending an egg because this hatchling just hatched out of an egg. But then when you adventured past it, you could feed it a resource it wanted, and that would cash it on the dragon, being worth a point at the end of the game, and then it would give you a resource back. But when you did it the third time, once you'd cash the third resource there, you got some big effect. So it was really fun to have one or two of those in my caves, where every time I was adventuring, I was making sure I had the right resource to kind of feed that baby dragon and then get to see it grow into a big dragon and give me some big effect. A little bit of a level up feature. I really like that with these, but there were many, I felt like many different types of effects that were happening on these dragons. Always fun to adventure past the ones that had the little adventure icon on them. But lots of, you know, end round benefits, lots of end game scoring benefits, things like that.
Yeah, in all the cards in this game, there was so many different things you could do, so much variety that I thought it really gave you something interesting to do almost every time. When you played those dragon cards, there were multiple things you can do, and I'll come back to that. But when you played the cave cards, you got an immediate benefit. Immediate benefits, like I said before, are always fun. Like, that was one thing that you tended not to get very much in Wingspan, was some kind of immediate benefit from the birds. There were some, but it wasn't that common. But with the cave cards, you're always getting something interesting, and there's a huge variety of benefits that you can get on those cards. When you play the dragons, you had essentially three different kinds of benefits. You either had end of round benefits, like at the end of every round you get something. There were explore benefits, so that when you were exploring your cave, taking the explore action, then you'd get a benefit when you got to that dragon. Or end of game benefits, which actually were pretty reminiscent to the end of game goal cards that exist in Wingspan, which don't exist here, but they do exist in Wingspan. And when I was playing this, I was actually playing it with my friend Marcus, who is a big Wingspan fan and one of the guys in my Thursday night game group. And he made a similar observation to what you did, Tim, that it was almost like having the mini expansion right in the box there. So the things that Wingspan does over the course of multiple expansions, there was a little bit of that strewn throughout the decks in Wormspan, and that made for some really nice variety.
I feel like the one last thing we haven't touched on here was the end of round goals, very similar to Wingspan, where you're saying, oh, I have the most shy dragons, or the most helpful dragons, or the most baby dragons. And so there's a little competition for that, and you get a few extra points if you have the most of this, or if you tie, or whatever. So that's the one last thing I was going to mention before we push on into theme and production.
Yeah, I'm glad you called out the end round scoring bonuses, Adam, because that is probably my favorite mechanism that existed in Wingspan. I always love that when you seed those four rounds at the beginning of the game with the different scoring benefits, and then you have these little goals to go for. And even if the, you know, the cards you draw don't match the first goal, then they might match the next round's goal. So if you kind of stock up this round, you might be a heads up on that one. Really love that system. And they basically mirrored that in Wormspan. That's one of the mechanisms that is almost exactly the same in Wormspan. And I'm so glad they kept it, because I think it works wonderfully, worked just as well in Wormspan. The other thing I wanted to shout back out to was Chris had mentioned the end game bonus cards. In Wingspan, you get a couple of them at the start of the game. You pick one and you're moving towards it. And they did eliminate that here. And I'm glad he called that out, because when I taught Wingspan in the past, I think that was one of the biggest frustrations for most of the people I taught it to, because they'd get this bonus card and then they felt like that's what they had to do the whole game. And they focused on it. And if they weren't seeing the cards come up, they'd get frustrated by it. And those just don't exist here, but they exist in the form of dragons that you can play throughout the course of the game. But it's kind of neat because you already have a little bit of information when you decide to play one of those dragons. You might already be meeting some of the conditions, or you might know you're going to play that dragon, and you've got a matching dragon that will kind of help meet that condition in your hand. So it feels like you've got a little bit more agency versus randomly being dealt one at the beginning of the game. There may not be that much more agency, but I think it's going to feel better for most players, and I think they're going to have more fun with it.
You know, that now that you mentioned that, Tim, that was one thing that was a little bit off-putting for me in Wingspan. You get these end of game goal cards. You're like, oh, I have to think about this now, and I don't want to, I don't want to do that right now. That was just a side note to me. Whenever I played Wingspan, I just kind of, oh, did I make this? Looks like I did. Or maybe it's the last bird I'm going to play of the game. Oh, here's these other objective cards I have. Nope, doesn't work for either of these, so it doesn't matter. Or, hooray, here's an extra three feathers I'm going to get for putting this guy out there. So, yeah, I didn't notice that during, you know, as I was playing Wormspan. But now that you mentioned it, I'm glad those are out of here.
That's funny. I'm one of those people who always started with their end of game goals and was like slavishly, you know, like trying to meet those goals. And I think it generally worked pretty well for me. And I like that that concept is still in there, but I think I am equally happy with the idea that you now select them. You choose them by buying those cards and playing the cards that you think you can meet and that you want to meet, just as long as they have the end game goals. I just think that's a fun element.
I just can't think that far ahead, Chris. That's
All right, well, let's jump into the theme and production of Wormspan.
I'm going to start with the production here. First of all, it's beautiful. The art and components of this game are absolutely fantastic. Stonemaier always puts out beautiful work, no exception here. The art on the cards is fantastic. The dragons are in all these different kinds of poses. Tim mentioned the little baby dragons. They're all cute, and they have this this blur effect. So you have, you know, maybe the face is focused and the background of the body is all out of focus. So some really nice job with the art and the components. I mentioned the little scaly coins. Those are cardboard, but you wouldn't know it. You look at them and you're like, whoa, what is this stuff made out of? Is this very vibrant silver with like a dragon wing on one side and little scales on the other side? So just from a production artwork standpoint, not talking about theme yet, but I think it's absolutely gorgeous.
I'm glad you mentioned those coins, Adam, because I'm of two minds on them. Now, when I first opened this box, I was the one that received the review copy first, so I punched it. And one of the neat things was that the coins were on a separate punch board from the rest of the components. The reason being because it was just this silver shimmery punch board of cardboard. So clearly the cardboard has a little coating that makes it look like a metal, and that was really neat. When you punch them out though, the coins themselves, they have on one side, it's like scales, you know, kind of just the scales of a dragon, but silver and shimmery. And then the other side, it's like part of a wing. You can kind of see the, you know, the segments of a wing in there. And although they look nice because they are shimmery, they didn't really feel like coins to me. They don't really have any elements that represent coins. Now, they were totally functional.
Are they going to offer metal coins for this?
Yeah, that's a great call out, Adam. I believe that Stonemaier Games is going to be releasing an upgrade pack for the components, which includes metal coins, but also wooden resource components. And I think this is a great call by them because you know some third parties are going to be making some extra resources. So good on them to make something right out of the gate. And that actually got me really excited because, again, these coins are totally functional. They look pretty neat, but they just never quite felt like coins to me. They just didn't hit the mark as like having any kind of detail that looks like a coin versus the metal coins that they're going to be selling separate. They actually have kind of a coin rim around the edge of it. So it feels a little bit more like a coin to me. So I am excited to play with those. And yeah, that's the only thing, minor gripe. But let me talk about the highlight of this game. Now, just like Wingspan had these beautiful bird cards, these birds that had wonderful artwork on them. And Wormspan does almost the same thing. The artist, Clementine Camperdue, created this wonderful watercolor looking style on these dragons. But it's a nice variety. There's some like these hatchling dragons, which look cute, kind of adorable. But in the same style, when you look at the adult dragons, they're a variety of looks and temperaments, even though the style all matches. But some of them look regal. Some of them look terrifying. Some of them look, you know, very bizarre. So it's such a cool variety in here on these dragon cards. It was also fun that every one of these dragon cards, it kind of tells you their personality. It says how large they are, but it gives you an actual personality trait. So it might say something like territorial or friendly or helpful. And so you could just, by looking at this card, you got a good sense for what that dragon was going to be like when you went through the cave and interacted with it. Really like this. Now, I have a lot more to say about these dragons, but I could talk for a long time, so I'm going to pass it off.
And so much to say on this. I'm going to start with my two minor complaints, one of which is the one I think that you already made, Tim. The coins didn't quite hit it. I was disappointed in the coins and also in the little chits that had the resources on them. So much of this game is this beautiful, kind of very pastel, light watercolor type artwork. Unfortunately, on these little tokens, which often you're going to have sitting in a bowl or something like that, those colors were similar enough that it was often a little bit difficult for me to tell which icon I was looking at until I actually picked up the token and looked at it to see whether it was a meat or a gold or whatever. So, but just scanning through the edges of them in a bowl, it was a little bit tough. But that is my only complaint about the production in this game. The artwork was absolutely amazing. I'll talk for a second about the back of the player boards because you didn't mention that, but holy cow, it's like this amazing Japanese style watercolor artwork that you just want to hang on your wall. And of course, the dragons are the star of the show. I was a little bit skeptical of this at first because I thought, you know, well, it's dragons. I mean, it's like, how much different can that be than Wingspan and the birds? But the reality is the fantastical nature of it, along with some of those little traits like the helpful, playful, this had, I thought, so much personality to it in a way that I'm not sure why the birds don't have that in Wingspan as much. I mean, the art in Wingspan is incredible, but there's something about the way that it was done in Wormspan that had even more personality, even more charm. And I'll talk for a second about my wife's reaction because she is normally somebody who is not at all charmed by fantastical things. She's a scientist. She likes the natural world. We played this game and her reaction was, this is the most beautiful game that she has ever played. She absolutely loved the artwork in this one. I completely agree with her. The charm of those cards is incredible. And another comment that she made that I'll repeat because I think this is interest. It hadn't even occurred to me, but I think is so true. She commented that so often when you have fantasy themes or fantastical themes like that, it is so easy to have them come across as overly masculine. Dragons, I mean, high fantasy, swords and sorcery kind of things, I can absolutely see that. She looked at this and said, it has all of the charm and the interest of something that might be fantastical, but without that gender-ish baggage associated with it, that it felt naturalistic and it had a slightly, you know, a feminine feel to it, was the way that she put it. And that to her made it a much more attractive game than it might have been if it was big, fire breathing, you know, angry looking dragons. I thought that was quite interesting.
I think that's a great point. It does stray away from the Dungeons and Dragons trope, which is nice. So yeah, very tastefully done. Now, one thing, it's tough for me, and this is why I proposed the poll question to Tim or something about, hey, Tim, ask about realistic versus fantastical theme. I miss the birds from Wingspan. I like those birds. I like that real world aspect of it. They're actual, like they're from this region of the world. This is their wingspan. This is something that actually exists and is out there. I really like that part. So yeah, I'm coming around on this one though. It is fantastical. Normally not my bag, but it is charming. All the things you guys are saying are totally true, but it's tough when none of this ties into something concrete for me.
Well, I'm going to totally disagree with you there, Adam. But again, that probably matches up with my response to our poll in that I prefer fantastical. So I think you just missed the mark there. Like, I thought the birds, especially when it first came out with Wingspan, the birds were a unique theme. We didn't have a lot of nature themed games like that. And I think they did it beautifully. Like the Audubon Society style artwork to it, just, it was a really great choice. I think it worked wonderfully, but I prefer the dragons. The dragons, you know, any type of fantastical world like this, fantastical creatures, to me just lead to more fun. You know, like there's more variety. Nothing feels just mundane. Versus in Wingspan, there's a variety of birds and they're really neat, but they're birds. They're mostly mundane, unless you call out the spoonbill roseate, of course.
Tim coming out with a spoonbill all of a sudden. Yeah. That's pretty nice.
But so anyway, I wanted to mention that in Wingspan, you know, they had put basically kind of bird facts on the bottom of each of the cards, but they didn't do that on these dragon cards, but they did get you covered for theme in the box, because in the box is this dragon guide, which is a separate book that basically just has an index of each of the dragons. It does show their stats, the stuff that you see on the cards, but then it shows a little factoid about each of these fictional dragons. And it was so neat. I mean, a lot of stuff about their diet, about their, like, where they could be located, their history. It was super fun. Beyond the facts, though, I just wanted to mention how unique some of these dragons are. They managed to take something like 120 unique dragons here, and they all felt unique. So let me give you some examples, right? You say, like, how many different dragons can there be? So I'm looking in this dragon guide, and I'm just looking on one page. It's in the seas, you'll notice. And here are some of the names. You've got the clairvoyant fey dragon, the colorful griff dragon, the common grass lindworm, the contrary lung dragon, the crafty moray, and the custodial koi worm. And these all have little different info notes about them. And as you start to see some of the same types of worms, like that lindworm I mentioned, there's a couple lindworms in there, and they'll kind of reference why they're related in some way, like they might share a diet or they might share location or some other attribute. So they just put a ton of detail into the lore. And I think it's wonderful. I think they really created a world with this game that I want to visit. It seems so neat.
In particular, the hatchlings were absolutely adorable. One of them, speaking of names, I think was Homely Fey Dragon or something similar to that. It was Homely something. And it was just absolutely adorable. And maybe that's one of the reasons why there's so much charm in this game, in a way that it's difficult to add in a game like Wingspan, where you're bound by reality. I mean, it's difficult to make a bird look really happy or funny without making it also look fake. Whereas with a dragon, you can take a little bit more license with that. And I think it was done to great effect here.
All right, well, now let's jump into our final thoughts. What I want you guys to do, though, instead of just saying, would you request to play the game again, which is the question we normally ask at this segment, but also talk a little bit about your history with Wingspan, how you felt about that game, and then also, which of, you know, how do you feel about Wormspan in comparison? Do you like one of them more of the others? What do you like about one or the other? So that people who are trying to get a sense for, you know, if Wingspan was for them or wasn't for them, will this also be for them or maybe instead? So let's dig into that a little bit.
I thought Wingspan was an okay game. What I liked was the birds and learn about the different kind of birds. And I like that real world aspect of that. But as far as the decisions you're making, sometimes I felt like there wasn't much to do. I mentioned it earlier. Sometimes you don't have any food. So you just got to go up to this top row, grab some food from the bird feeder. And that's okay, but that's kind of boring. And then eventually maybe you get a couple cards, right? That lets you activate food as soon as you activate or get some free food. As soon as you activate that row, you get some lucky cards and boom, you've got 500 eggs by the end of the game and you win the game by like 30 points. So it was an okay game. I didn't mind it. Here in Wormspan, I think the decisions you're making almost across the board are more interesting and more fun than they were in Wingspan. Would I request to play this one again? I think I would request to play this one again a few more times. I don't think I'm going to go out and buy it. Maybe if my kids are super into the dragons and they want something to play and we could play this as like a family game, then I might look into it. But I had a lot of fun playing this one, a lot more fun than I did playing Wingspan, which I don't think is a horrible game. But the decisions I thought were more fun. That guild track was more fun. Doing the caves was great. Putting the dragons out and seeing how all these things combo together. I had a lot of fun playing Wormspan.
Yeah, so I always thought Wingspan was a well-made game, well-crafted, nice design, and I never minded playing it. But it never got me too excited. I always did like the end round scoring goals in it. I thought that was a cool mechanism, something for me to really focus on. But I think some of the other mechanisms just put me off. I found the repetitive nature of the actions you're taking and, you know, basically like the game starts out so slow, you're not doing a whole lot with your first couple turns. I just spent an action to get an egg or spent an action to get a food. And even as you grow up those rows, a lot of time, okay, I just got three food, you know, just some of that stuff, just, it felt a little bit redundant to me. The other thing about Wingspan is that the theme was beautifully presented. It was done great. I don't think they could have done it in a better way, but nature and birds are just not as exciting for me to revisit frequently. Wormspan, I think just like with Adam, really escalated everything that was solid about Wingspan and made it better and added a lot of things that I really loved in it. I think this is, for me, just a more fun game. It's a more interesting design. There are more interesting choices in the game. It feels like a more fun puzzle for me. And I never took a turn that I wasn't having fun. I never took a turn that I felt was dull. I also love the theme. And I think, again, they knocked it out of the park, did a great presentation. I really like this game and I plan to buy it. I think I'm going to pick it up right away. I don't normally buy things right when they come out at their top prices because I just don't need to rush into more games. But in this case, Stonemaier is going to be selling those upgraded components and I just want to pick them up right away. Another point about this game is that it's rare, but my wife, after I played it with her one time, she asked to play it again the next day. And she almost never does that. So I know that if she liked a game enough to ask for it a second time, this game is going to get played. And I'm excited about that because I think it's a wonderful game. So Wormspan was a big hit for me.
Well, I'm glad to say that we do have a little bit of diversity of opinion here tonight on this. That's always fun. And I'll start with my history with Wingspan. I am a big fan of Wingspan. It is not a game I pull out every time because it is, you know, it's a relatively simple game and relatively medium weight. And I often go for somewhat heavier weight games. But I have a long history with this. And in particular, it's a game that I've gotten out multiple times for people that are not gamers and they're charmed by it. When the pandemic hit us, I converted some friends to gaming who are now pretty serious gamers by bringing out Wingspan. And I think that it's a great introduction to people in the board gaming hobby. And it just, I think it's a great game overall. And it has a big spot in my heart. I will confess, I went into Wormspan as a bit of a skeptic. And part of the reason was I thought, this is just going to be a reskin of Wingspan. Why are they doing this? Even the style of the art is relatively similar. And you've already heard my thoughts on the art now that I've actually played the game. But what really shocked me was that this did not feel to me anything like playing Wingspan. But let me expound on that a little bit, because it's a little bit more complicated than that. There's so much similar DNA between the two that it actually, in a way, feels a ton like playing Wingspan. If you've already played Wingspan, you can pick this one up. It's a 5-minute teach or less. But in terms of the actual feels of the game, the weight of the game in particular, I felt like they were worlds apart. In terms of the fence between, you know, it's more complex, less complex, I fall firmly in the, this is a more complex game. And one of the things about that that really drives my opinion, Wingspan, for better or for worse, feels like a puzzle that can be solved. Wormspan feels to me a lot more like a sandbox. There's so many different things you can do, different ways that you can get your resources, different ways that you can score your points, that everybody that I played this with, and these are all folks who are well familiar with Wingspan, all felt like this was a much more thinky, crunchy, complex game, at least in terms of decision making. The rule set wasn't particularly complex, but it was more complex in terms of the decisions and trying to maximize, trying to optimize what you're doing. That was more difficult. The one other question I want to touch on really quickly is whether or not somebody needs to own this one and Wingspan, or one or the other, or, you know, who should go for which. I'm shocked to find myself saying that I could actually see a place for this game and Wingspan in a collection, because they do feel so different. If I want a lightweight or medium weight game for non-gamers, I'm probably going to bust out Wingspan. If I wanted something a little crunchier, something I might play with you guys, I'd probably rather play Wormspan. Does that mean you need both of these games? I don't think you do. I'm still on the fence about whether I'm going to get this one. And really what it comes down to is there is enough similarity that I'm not sure I can justify getting both of them. But I can see where if someone was a super fan of Wingspan or a super fan of Dragons, one of the game people in my game group that unfortunately was not able to join us for the play of this is a Dragon super fan. For someone like her, this is going to be the clear winner in that decision. But not everybody's going to be that way. But if someone was a super fan of Wingspan and wanted the entire universe, then I could see this one having a place in that collection. Like I said, not sure that I need to have both of them, but I can actually see where someone might want to do that.
All right, cool. Well, that will wrap up our conversation on Wormspan. We're going to be jumping into some games that have been on our table right after this.
On my table has been Soul, Last Days of a Star. This is designed by Ryan Spangler, Sean Spangler, and now listed on the box is also Jody Sweetman. The artist here is John Meatling, and I mention the artist because I think the art is striking in this game. The game board especially, you've got this, and I've talked about all this stuff before in previous episodes, so sorry if this is all repeat for everyone that's heard me talk about this game before. You've got this star that's off-gassing and has all these flares going which way, this way and that, and you've got these tracks wrapped around. Anyway, it's a beautiful star amidst this black outer space in the background. It's just one of the most striking board games in all of board games, I think. So that's nice. So this is the second printing, and it recently delivered from their Kickstarter, originally from 2017. But here it is 2024, and this one just came to my door. This is one I owned back in the day when I first got into board gaming. I saw this one, and I was just intrigued by the production mostly. And I got it to the table, played it a few times, and wasn't too compelled by it. And it was out of print at that point, so I sold it for way more than I bought it for, knowing that this one was coming back, and I didn't have anybody to play it with. So it's back. This is one of the few games other than I think The Expanse that I've reacquired. Anyway, I've talked about the production, the theme a little bit. I'll talk about that. Well, let me go back to the production. This is so it's beautiful and it's simple. There's not that much stuff. There's five player colors with some little ships and components. And that's about it. You got your little tiny player board, which is your hole. So a tiny little player board, your little components, and a board game and some cards. And that's all you have here. So there's not an excess of stuff, which I very much appreciate, especially after packing up Voidfall recently. Oh my goodness, what a chore that was. Anyway, the theme here, you're all different civilizations from the same solar system trying to gather energy from this star that's dying and it's going to go supernova at any moment. So whoever has the most momentum at the end of the game, when that last solar flare comes out, is the winner. You fly away and you're successful. So that's the theme. Very nice theme here. And the gameplay I'm going to mention quickly, it's simple. You have one of three actions on your turn. You can move, build, or activate. So that's all you do. You have these little sun divers flying those around. You put them in little formations, and then you can build by recalling those sun divers. If they're in the right pattern, they build an energy node or a transmission tower or a sun diver foundry, or you can fly those sun divers into the core of the sun and get some momentum and some points from doing that. That's always exciting. There's a positive player interaction, which I like about this game too. You can use other people's buildings that they've built. And if you're observant, you can sneak their bonus away from them too. But if they have enough energy to pay for it, they can always pay and get the bonus when they provide the services of you using their equipment. So that's nice. It's a quick game, light rules overhead. There's high player interaction, positive player interaction, emergent gameplay, and an exciting ending. I played this one three-handed solo and had a blast. What is not to love about Soul, Last Days of a Star? Maybe Tim could tell me.
Well, if you go back and listen to our review from maybe 6 months ago where we featured Soul, Last Days of a Star, you can hear my thoughts on it. And that is that I think it's an interesting design, but I never have very much fun playing it. Now, let me ask you a question though, Adam. Do you think if I was sitting down at a table playing with this physical production, am I going to enjoy it more? Is that going to change the experience for me?
I still don't think you're going to like this one, Tim. Maybe it'll click for you. I'll be honest with you. It took maybe the third or fourth game for this one to finally click for me and being like, you know what? I get it now. This is how the sun divers need to be. They're going to come to this shape and they're going to make this building. One thing I didn't mention, one of the coolest parts about the game is the suits, right? So you play with these different suits of cards. Each one of those give you a different power, and those are all variable. So you have one of these cards in your hole, and that gives you a little bonus or some sort of activation, some sort of little sneaky power you get to do. I absolutely love these. I don't know how many, there's like 30 or 40 different little powers that you can assign suits to. So high variability when you're setting up this game too. That is just tons of fun picking those different powers. I don't know, Tim. I still don't quite get why this one doesn't quite click for you. You know what? I did look at Board Game Geek. It has people who enjoy this game might also enjoy like Irish Gauge and a bunch of cube rail games. So those are ones you also mentioned just not having a taste for either. That's but funny. Cosmic Frog is on here, Chris. So there you go.
Really?
Indeed. Anyway, I don't know, Tim. I hope that this one clicks for you someday, but I would not be surprised if it never does.
Well, as any time, if you bring a game to the table and you really want to get it played, I'll play it with you and I'll give it my best shot. But it's not very often that a game I didn't like on my first couple plays is something that starts to warm up for me.
Well, thanks for being a good sport about this one, Tim.
Yeah, and I'm interested to try it again, too. I kind of felt like Tim did when we played it the first time. And honestly, hearing you describe it now, it sounds like great fun. I can't remember why I didn't like it that much. I just remember I didn't like it that much. But I do want to talk about the production on this game because it does amazing things. I mean, this is a cool looking game. And one of the things that I love about it is the pieces in this are abstract, sort of in the mode of chess pieces almost, that they're kind of like ships. But there's these sort of abstractions that generally in a very smooth, softened way represent ships or stations or gates in a way that reminds me a lot of the game Disney Villainous, which is another game that I thought had a really interesting production where you have these pieces that don't actually look like, I don't know, the Little Mermaid or King Richard or, you know, whatever the character is that you're talking about, but at the same time, clearly represent them in a way of a chess piece. And I think this game, for all of the complaints that I can't actually remember about the gameplay, has an amazing table presence. And I want to play it again just for that, if nothing else.
I'm excited to play this one when we get together in April.
Yeah.
Well, the game that's been on my table this week is a game called Mind Management. That's Mind MGMT. This was designed by Jay Cormier and Sen Fung Lim. And the artist was Matt Kint. Now, I don't know all the lore about this, but I think this is based on a graphic novel. And the artist is relevant because I think Matt Kint was the original artist for the graphic novel and maybe the writer. I'm not really sure about that. But basically, this is a game about this kind of psychic spy group that, I don't know, works for some unknown government. And theoretically, they were in place originally to prevent global disasters. But of course, power corrupts from within. And so, you know, it's starting to become a bad organization. They're doing bad things to protect themselves. Well, you've got a couple rogue agents. That's who most of the players are going to be here. And they're going to be trying to stop the recruiter from recruiting more people and stop this organization from recruiting more people. This is a one versus many game, and it's a hidden movement deduction game. The idea being that you've got this kind of map laid out on the table. It's a city, and it's set into a grid. I want to say like an 8x8 or 9x9 grid or something like that. And it's got the artist's artwork on it, but inserted into each of these little grids are a couple of icons or a couple of you know, things that you might see out there. Maybe it's a group of monks, or maybe it's a couple dogs, or maybe it's a like a tiki totem, or, you know, a billboard. And so there are these 10 different icons that are going to be distributed out throughout the map. There's two icons on every grid space, and each of the icons is represented somewhere on the map at least 5 times. And the recruiter, the one who you're, you know, the one versus the many, the one is the recruiter, and he's got a map that's hidden behind a screen, a mirror of this main map. And it's like a dry erase map. And basically what he's going to be doing on his dry erase map for no one else to see is kind of mark where his recruiter is moving throughout this map. And the rogue agents are trying to figure out where the recruiter is. And eventually, if they feel like they're in the same space with him, they can take an action that will basically reveal him, and then they win the game. Otherwise, if after 20 turns or something like that, 15 turns, if you have not found the recruiter, or if the recruiter's recruited a certain number of new recruits, new agents, then you would lose the game as the many group. So that's basically how the game works. As the rogue agents are moving around the map, they can do a couple things. That some of the actions they can take would be like to, you know, they can basically go to one of the spaces that has an icon on it and ask the recruiter if he can reveal that he's been anywhere on the map that had that icon. And so he would have to put a little footprint marker out on the map to show that he'd been there. And the rogue agents are basically trying to find more and more clues about where this agent is, or where this recruiter is. And the recruiter can only move one space per turn. So if they can really hone in on where he's been recently, they might be able to target where he is. There's some other special actions that happen. Each of the rogue agents have a unique special ability that they can trigger. And then there's also these, I think they're called the immortals, but they're more kind of components that the recruiter player gets to move around the board. And they will also, by trying to match some visible conditions, they can also try to recruit some new agents as well. And so you kind of have the pressure of both trying to find the recruiter within a certain amount of time, as well as prevent them from, you know, recruiting from a variety of ways. I did not like this game very much. I don't think a hidden movement game is for me. I didn't find it very fun. But I don't know that that's very useful for anyone listening to this, because I just don't think it's my type of game. It's probably a very clever game. If you like hidden movement style deduction games, this one might be just fine. But I can tell you that the couple of times I've played any games like this, I've never enjoyed them. So I think the only thing valuable I can say about this is, if you like this type of game, you should probably check it out. It's probably great. If you don't, this probably won't change your mind. For me, it was just dull. It was like 20 turns of taking an action that was mostly a guess maybe get a little bit of information that might be useful. And then kind of like we were talking about with Turing Machine last week, how, you know, when you're first trying to figure out the puzzle, that's not fun. But then when you come close to a solution, then it starts to get exciting. Well, this game got exciting, like maybe turn 14 out of 15. And then the whole rest of the game, I just wasn't having very much fun playing it. So this was not for me. Beyond that, I actually had to cooperate. You know, right? This is a one versus many. I was on the rogue agent side and I had to cooperate with my friend.
Ugh, horrible.
And there's, you know, first turn of the game he takes and he's like, so Tim, what should I do here? And I don't want to play your game for you. You make a decision. And then my first turn of the game, I make a decision. It's like, you weren't going to talk with me about that. No, that's, I don't play games to be cooperative with my friends. So probably that didn't help me either. It didn't help me enjoy the game because, you know, I just don't like cooperative games. That's not a fun part of the experience for me. So all in, mind management, not a hit for me. I don't want to play it again, but maybe very fun for you if you like this style of game.
Did the other players have fun playing this one?
I think they did. Yeah. My one friend who was playing the recruiter, it was his game. And so he had learned the rules in advance and probably makes sense to play the one player, you know, while knowing the rules already, because you don't have to ask questions that are going to give away stuff. And he said he was excited to go back to it again. My other friend who really likes cooperative games, he seemed to enjoy it as well. I think they both liked it more than I did, you know, but who can say?
So Tim, could you even play it? And if so, would it be better as a one-on-one game?
That's a great question, Chris. And it looks like it is listed as a 1-5 player game. So you must even be able to play it solo, presumably against a bot or something. And BGG has it listed as at best at 2-3. So maybe, you know, it probably would have been more fun for me at 2. I still don't think I would have liked it that much, but at least it would have taken that cooperative element out of it.
I would say the art is charming on here. It looks fantastic. Some of the cars, there's a little Black Ops dolphin swimming around. The art style is neat and some of the cards look clever. So it's got that going for it at least.
Yeah, all the theming in it is fantastic. It's got, you know, really neat artwork and it's got just a funny, interesting theme. All these elements that you're interacting with on the board have you know, they're real world things, but they give them names that are just, you know, kind of silly and goofy, like indicating that they're psychic in some way. It was a really neat production and a really cool theme. I can see why the graphic novel was worth making into a board game. So I think for the theme alone, it might be worth exploring for you. But again, you're going to want to like this type of game before you give it a try.
Well, I'm with you. I'm not a big fan of one versus many games. That's actually one of the biggest shortcomings of a game that I like quite a bit, Batman Gotham City Chronicles, which is much better as a one versus one game than it is as a one versus many game. So as pretty much any game would be. But the other thing that it makes me think of, and this is a great segue into my on the table, is how deduction games are best as small bite-sized puzzles like Turing Machine. And that's the game that's been on my virtual table recently since we did our very recent review of this game. At the end of that one, I commented, I think, that I had had fun with it and I'd have to play it some more, but I wanted to, you know, give it more of a try. And at the time, I was thinking that this is a game that my wife might like. She loves puzzles, loves logic puzzles, that sort of thing. And, you know, she is someone also who doesn't like to be seen as too predictable. And this is one situation where I brought her this and said, I think you're going to like this. And sure enough, she got addicted to it pretty quickly. Now, she also said she wasn't sure if she enjoyed it. She got addicted to it, but wasn't sure she liked it that much, which is not that different than my own feelings about it. I liked it enough that I've got it in my regular rotation now on BGA. So that really says something. But it's a game that I think fits this very small niche. And that is, if you want something quick, speedy, brisk, how many words can I come up with for quick? and small, it's great. And I'm endlessly fascinated by the way that they made this production work with the cards that go together and show you the answer. But I'm so glad that this is not a big, chunky, heavy game with multiple rounds. And so I think that this game is a little puzzle that's a lot of fun. I'm still not sure I need to buy a copy of it. I think I'm getting my fix on BGA, but I did want to weigh back in on that one because we had just reviewed it recently, and now I have the benefit of several more plays, and my feeling is about the same, that I'm enjoying it, and it has made it into the rotation.
Have you tried hard mode again, Chris, and did you understand at all what those clue cards were trying to tell you?
That's a great question. And no, I have not tried hard mode again because that just felt miserable. But I do think that I got a little bit more of an intuitive feel now for the way the cards work. I mean, I played it at the easy level, but even that, you know, it's the proposition part of it that, you know, I'm proposing this thing to the computer and the computer's telling me whether it's true or not, or any part of it is true. So I think I get it a little better. Maybe I would like the hard version better now, but I don't know. I don't think so. I don't like puzzles that are that hard.
Yeah, and there was even an appendix in the book that kind of explained some of those clue cards, and I looked at them, and I still, even with the description, I couldn't quite understand them.
I've gotten back to this one a few times as well, Chris, and I'm having a pretty fun time playing this Alacritus game on Board Game Arena, and I've tried that hard mode, and the hardest part for me is interpreting what those cards, some of those verification cards are actually telling me. So I need to spin, you know, I got to do more homework before I get down mm-hmm. to deducing some stuff, what these cards are actually telling me. So for me, that's the hardest part of the hard version of the game at this point.
That's cool that you got back to it. I'm glad you gave it another shot. All right. Well, we're almost done with this episode, except I do have a review to read. If you enjoy the show, please rate and review us on Apple Podcasts and we'll give you a shout out on the show. We love seeing these, so keep them coming. This review came from RE4 Noob up in Canada. This is from one of our Canadian listeners. Hope you're staying warm up there right now. The title was one of my favorites, 5 stars. I started listening to this podcast several months back after searching for more board game podcasts to listen to. I was starting to lose hope because I wasn't enjoying many of the other ones I found during my search. This was about the 5th one I went to listen to. I nearly didn't, but I'm very glad I did. I now look forward to a new episode every week. Tim, Chris, and Adam are all great to listen to. They're all quite knowledgeable on the games they play. I appreciate hearing their opinions on how the game played, specific mechanisms, component quality, what player count they thought worked best, and they usually make me laugh as well with their banter among one another. Very rarely will I go and listen to a backlog of episodes. However, over the holiday, I've gone back and started listening from every episode 1 onward. That is so nice, RE4. I'm so glad you're enjoying the show. I apologize for the quality on some of those early episodes. They do continue to get better, so stick with us and hopefully you enjoy the journey. But thank you so much. We really appreciate it. Any other listeners, again, if you'd like to interact with us, you can find us on Blue Sky. If you need an invite to Blue Sky, just email me at tim@boardgamehottakes.com and I'll be happy to share one with you. Or you can find us on our Facebook group. We got very active communities in both places. Until next week, take care, everybody.
Good night, all.
Bye-bye.